This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name is Kerry and I'm from Lancashire. And I first started listening to the OTI podcast about 2 years ago, but I've been really looking at wanting to change my daily drinking for a few years and really felt like I needed to change my relationship with alcohol. So I binge listened to the podcast, which I thought were fantastic, and then heard about the OTI community. So I joined up when I started off doing Sober October. Really, it's been an absolute game changer. The community is just amazing. It picks you up if you're feeling a bit down. The members support you and they celebrate your wins. I really don't think I would have be where I am now if it wasn't for the OTI community. So all I can say is give it a go. What have you got to lose?
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to another episode of Over the Influence. Today we have got a fabulous, fabulous guest to chat to, who I will introduce very, very shortly. If you've joined us for the first time, my name is Shazza Hartley, Sharon Hartley, Shaz Hartley, call me what you like, nobody calls me Sharon. Set out on an alcohol-free journey 982 days ago. Heading towards triple figures. Who'd have thunk it? Honestly, it's an absolute joke. Still loving life, still alcohol free, and it still continues to surprise me. It is absolutely brilliant. My co-host is Freddie, who is in the future.
I am in the future, but always, even at this early hour on a New Zealand morning, Shazza, you are always a sight for sore eyes. Hello, everybody. My name is Freddie, otherwise known as Freddie. I did the tally the other day, Shazza. I'm just coming up to my 800th day alcohol-free. Yes, and it's crazy. After trying and failing 1,000 times for over 10 years to change my relationship with alcohol when I was hard working, heavy drinking, very hard partying, I finally found a method that worked. I met you, Shazza, and my whole life changed. I wouldn't be doing any of this right now, not the travel, not the world records, not the writing, the running or anything, if I hadn't decided to put down that drink and maybe see what I was capable of. So it is a pleasure, as always, to be here with you all and here with our listeners today.
Isn't he nice, Ben? He's so nice. We've also got our lovely producer background, Ben, and I can't wait to share Ben's story with our guest, who I've still not introduced. Please just bear with us. Background Ben was a beer drinker when he first met us, but now he's not. Tell us about your alcohol-free journey, Ben.
Hi, Shazza. Hi, Freddie. And hi, guest, who I'm really excited to talk to. So I started producing this podcast last year. Didn't really think I needed to examine my own relationship with alcohol because I thought that it was fine. I was just normal. Turns out I wasn't quite normal, and I did drink a bit more than I thought I did. So I dabbled with moderation. That didn't work. As soon as lockdown one hit, I was drinking pretty much every day. Felt terrible, decided to pack it all in, and I am now 10 months alcohol-free.
Oh, that's
brilliant.
Felt
better. Whoa.
Yay! That's so good. That's so good.
And Claire Pawley's our guest.
Sharon, stop. No, he just couldn't help himself. Claire, you're going to need some context for this. So when you go alcohol-free, for many of us, you know, and I think it's safe to say a lot of women, you are told to arm yourself with all the alcohol-free tools in the world, be it alcohol-free drinks, changing your circle of friends, do this, do that. But one of the big keys and one of the pivotal things to do is get that stack of Quitlet on your bedside table. Now, if you don't know what Quitlet is, basically it is books all about giving up you know, alcohol, books about sobriety. And the best thing about it is other people sharing their journeys so you don't feel like an absolute weirdo. At the top of my pile of my Quit Lit books 982 days ago was The Sober Diaries. It is written by Claire Pooley, and we are now talking to Claire Pooley. Hello!
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to see you all, and I'm thrilled to be here. So thanks so much for asking me on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Not as excited as us. Now, what I'm going to do, Claire, I'm actually going to hand straight over to Ben, because believe it or not, he's your biggest fan, and he's going to fanboy his way through this. He loved your book. I'm going to stop. Ben, please jump in.
Look, I'm not going to go over the top here, Claire, because I will embarrass myself. But it was, yours was the first. I was a bit sceptical about reading Quit Lit. When I first started, I thought, how much is it, especially written by women, especially women who've got children, and like there wasn't really much about your life that matched with mine. I started reading your book. It was so funny that I just couldn't put it down. It was brilliantly written, and I couldn't believe how much it kind of resonated with me, and it actually gave me a real strength in the early days to carry on. So thank you ever so much for writing it. And it's just, yeah, Chazza, you take over again. I can't do this.
I'm really enjoying watching this. I'm really loving it. Claire, where to start? I was looking back at some of your, you've posted so much stuff online and you've shared so much of your story, but go back to that December when your book was released a couple of years ago, and you said you were utterly, butterly terrified about sharing your story. Just take us back to that point.
Yeah, I started off when I first quit drinking with a blog, and it was anonymous. So I called myself Sober Mummy, and I called the blog Mummy Was a Secret Drinker. And I tried really hard to make sure that nobody could associate me with it. So I didn't post anything on social media. I really kept my head under the parapet. And, you know, somehow people found out about this blog and it sort of went crazy. But it wasn't because I publicized it in any way. I was, quite the reverse. So I was used to just quietly doing my own thing and nobody knowing it was me. And then, as you say, December 2017, my book came out and it was under my real name. And I remember like the three nights before the book came out, I had the same recurring dream. And I don't know if you've ever had this dream, but I dreamt that I was walking down a really crowded street in the middle of the day and I was completely naked and everybody else had all their clothes on.
That was Freddie's drinking days, you've just described that.
I was about to say, that sounds very familiar. It sounds like my 30th birthday.
You know, but that's how it feels. It feels like you're going out into the world totally naked. And I was really terrified. And Quit Lit, the sort of Quit Lit that, you know, I wrote wasn't really a thing then. You know, it was a new thing to do. And I was just utterly terrified that people were going to just be really cruel. I thought I'd get horribly trolled. I thought my kids would be bullied. I thought, you know, I was really scared. I thought, what am I doing? And I was trying to work out if it was too late to cancel. And my publishers had lined up appearances on Woman's Hour and Lorraine and Victoria Derbyshire and, you know, all these, Steve Wright, you know, all these sort of national media with me telling everybody about the worst and most embarrassing experiences of my life. So, you know, I was terrified.
And Claire, it'd be great to know, and, you know, as you mentioned with the worst and most embarrassing experiences of your life, for anyone in some far distant corner of the planet that hasn't heard of you or read your book, is it possible to give the listeners just a bit of an overview of your journey and why you decided it was time to take a break from alcohol in the first place?
Yeah, of course. I think my story is very like the story of so many other people. And actually, I think what we all find is that we think we're all very different. And, you know, as you said, Ben, you know, you're not a housewife with three kids. And but actually, the experience of addiction and getting over addiction is so, so similar for all of us. It's extraordinary. So, you know, my story is not particularly unique. So I spent 20 years in the world of advertising, and it was hard, very hard working, hard drinking. It was great fun. And, you know, I grew up with Bridget Jones and Absolutely Fabulous and Sex in the City. And I thought that drinking, you know, copious amounts of wine and cocktails and what have you was sort of what emancipated feminist women did. You know, I thought that was, you know, that was our way of keeping up with the guys. And it was also, you know, it was my way of celebrating. It was my way of commiserating. It was my way of relaxing, of having fun, you know, pretty much any emotion at all after a while became associated with alcohol. And then I quit work when my third child was born. I thought I'd have a bit of time, you know, looking after my kids at home and before I go back into work. And you know, I found that much harder than I thought I was going to. And instead of my alcohol intake reducing, it actually got even worse, because I get to the end of the day and I think, okay, this is me time. This is sort of, you know, this is my grown-up time, and I'm going to pour myself a large glass of wine and, you know, relax because I've earned it. And all over my social media, there were mothers doing exactly the same thing. So, you know, it was all wine o'clock and mummy's little helper and all that stuff. And the thing is, a large glass of wine is a third of a bottle. And quite quickly, one glass wasn't enough. And, you know, I moved on to two glasses, and then I was drinking three glasses. And three big glasses of wine is a whole bottle of wine. And at the weekends, I was drinking two bottles of wine. So in total, I was drinking 10 bottles of wine. But, you know, I was rarely drunk. You know, I was so, my tolerance by this stage was so, you know, good that, you know, nobody even really noticed that I had a problem. It was only when I, you know, totted up the amount, a number of bottles in the recycling, that I realized how awful it was. And, you know, as you all know, when you start drinking that much, it has a real impact on your mental health and your physical health. So I was a terrible insomniac. I was anxious all the time. You know, I was I felt like I was being a really bad mother. I was being a really bad role model. I was horribly overweight, and, you know, my whole life was just, you know, I got stuck in a rut. Everything, my whole life had got really small. And yeah, so, and I spent so many of my evenings, you must have done this, Googling, am I an alcoholic?
Oh, Claire, don't. It's, yeah.
And, you so know, many and hungover days where you just think, oh, you know, have I got a problem? And it's almost like you're, because I literally did that, and I was on YouTube as well doing all these things. I couldn't work out whether I was trying to work out if I had a problem or whether I was trying to convince myself that I didn't.
Exactly.
Maybe it was both, but it's crazy, isn't it?
And, you know, and I think it's because we all have this stereotypical idea of what alcohol addiction looks like. And if you don't match that, you know, if you don't match that image, you think, well, you know, I'm okay. And also the idea of quitting is so frightening that you just do anything to convince yourself that you're not that person. So, you know, I had these rules. I think, well, if I don't drink before midday, then I'm not an alcoholic. And if I don't drink every single day, then I'm not an alcoholic. And if I don't drink vodka, then, you know, I mean, it was, you know, the ways that you excuse your behavior is extraordinary.
What you've just described there, Claire, talking, you know, I'm a mum the same as you, working, three kids, totally relatable, totally get it. You sit down at the end of the day, and as you say, it's just one large glass of wine. And then before you know it, well, that's not enough. So you do have two, and then you have three. And but that's perfectly acceptable in inverted commas, and you are looking at your social media feeds, and it's you know, it's wine o'clock, and it's okay because it's 5 o'clock somewhere in the world, and all this, and it's constantly just driven in that this is perfectly acceptable. And there are millions of, not just women, millions of people doing exactly the same thing every night, day in, day out. But at what point is it where you sort of go, hang on, I'm drinking a bottle of wine a night? When did this become acceptable? And it's sort of that realization that it sort of creeps up gradually, I think, and it bites you on the bum. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do, totally. And so often people say to me, you know, what is the sign? You know, if you were designing one of those, am I an alcoholic things? You know, what you know, what do you think is the sign that things have got out of control? And, you know, personally, I don't think we're asking the right question. I don't think the question is, am I an alcoholic? I don't think anyone really knows what an alcoholic is. And, you know, certainly I don't use the word myself. I talk about being an alcohol addict. And, you know, that's not the question. The question is alcohol messing up my life? And if you ask that question, then the answer is pretty easy, really. And I think the moment you know that alcohol is really messing up your life is when it takes up too much headspace.
Oh.
And for me, I spent so much time thinking about drinking, you know. And when I was drinking, I was thinking about drinking. When I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking even more. You know, I was trying to work out when I was next going to drink, what I was going to drink, how much I was going to drink, where I was going to buy the drink from. You know, it just went round and round in my head all the time, and it was exhausting.
And I was going to drop the first bombshell of the episode. I know it's going to shock you all.
Oh, here we go.
But I'm not a mum. I am a dad, though. I was going to ask you, Claire, did you find, obviously this was before lockdown, when we could do things like socialise, were you in a circle where everyone was drinking the same amount, or did you start to notice, or was there a point you started to notice, you know, that you would take it a bit further than everyone else? And the reason I asked the question is obviously being a dad, and it was, you know, it's very similar. It's kind of like the dad's blokey Saturday night. It's like, you know, time off from the family, down the pub, the boys' holidays, the stag do's. And I came from a very heavy drinking, heavy partying circle of friends, but like you say, I realised I was reaching a point where I was thinking about it, I was doing it more, I was having that badge of honour that I was having more drinks than anyone else. And so in your social circle, did you notice that, or was everyone doing very much the same thing?
Well, I think the tricky thing is, if alcohol is a really big deal in your life, which it was in mine, obviously, you tend to surround yourself by people who are doing just the same. So, you know, so for instance, you know, when my kids started going to school, I would gravitate towards the mums that I knew were big drinkers also. And, you know, if I invited somebody round, you know, if somebody came round to pick their child up from a play date at my house at like 6 p.m, I said, you know, do you want a glass of wine or a cup of tea? If they said a cup of tea, I would immediately cross them off my list, you know.
You will not see that child again.
You know, it's really awful, but you do sort of, you know, and it's partly why it takes you so long to realise that actually you are drinking too much, because you surround yourself by people who are doing exactly the same thing. So, yeah, I don't think I really did feel like an outlier. But that was only because I'd made it that way and I didn't realise I was doing that, but I definitely was.
Do quite a lot of Zoom groups, Claire, where we have our listeners join us on Zoom. We all have a bit of a chat about our alcohol free lives, and there's a guy on there the other day that said a quote that's just stuck with me. He said, I didn't have a rock bottom, but I could see it from where I was standing. And I think that's where I approach this from. I don't think that I was addicted to alcohol. I do think that if I carried on my lifestyle in the same way, that absolutely could have happened to me and was probably on my horizon if I didn't nip it in the bud when I did. The idea of I was the centre of a social, you know, you talk about these big social circles. I was at the middle of that. You know, I was orchestrating those nights out. I'd be the person who would send the first text in the WhatsApp group, be the last man standing. And it was such a big part of my identity. With your friends and family, were they shocked when you decided to pack it in? Because obviously you were secretly doing the blog for quite a long time before they found out.
Yeah, they were shocked. And I think the main reason they were shocked is because they didn't think that I had a problem. So they thought I was being, you know, I was going completely over the top. And what they couldn't understand is why I didn't just drink less. You know, they sort of, I think their feeling was, okay, I can see you might be drinking too much and I can understand you wanting to drink less, but why do you have to give up altogether? And, you know, what I had to end up explaining was the fact that I tried to drink less for years. You know, I tried to drink less for about a decade. And you know, for me, that was even more exhausting than giving up altogether, way more exhausting than giving up altogether. And, you know, I realize now that there are two types of people in the world. There are the sort of natural moderators, and my husband is one of those, curse him. And there are people who are all or nothing, which is where I am. And, you know, I just couldn't moderate. You know, I tried setting all sorts of rules for myself that, you know, I would stick to for a couple of weeks and then would go straight out the window. And, you know, it just didn't work. So yes, they were rather shocked. I think my husband also was rather shocked. I mean, he married a party girl and ended up with a teetotaler. But actually he's been unbelievably supportive, so thank goodness.
I love your take, Claire, on moderation. And now Ben is going to kill me for this, but I can't
you smirking then, Chaz, while Claire was saying that.
I can't let this pass, Claire. When we started out with Ben, obviously he was drinking, absolutely no problem, you know, and if anybody wants to drink, c'est la vie. We never said, oh, we must find ourselves an alcohol-free producer. None of that, you know, whatever goes. And then the further Ben got into it, you know, he thought, oh, maybe cut down my intake. And we've got this whole episode called Moderation. And what Ben did in 2020, it's that confusing. I can't even begin to sort of put it into words to explain it to you. Ben dabbled with moderation, and it was called 20 in 2020. And he gave himself 20 days where he was allowed to drink, right, in 2020. And I listened back to the episode earlier this week, and it turns out he only gave himself 17 days with 3 floating days. And then I listened to it and I just burst out laughing. And you think back and you think, the noise that must have created in your head, Ben, never mind ours. your intentions were great. But Claire, the whole moderation thing, it's breathtaking, isn't it? Once you start to try and I'll do this there, I'll float there, I'll do this there. When the moon rises in Saturday, I'll do this there. And then Ben just sacked it off and went alcohol-free.
Yeah, and it is exhausting. You know, I tried doing the, you know, I'm only going to drink when I'm out. I'm not going to drink at home. And then I do the, I'm only going to drink beer because I don't really like beer. And then I was going to alternate alcoholic drinks with non-alcoholic drinks. And, you know, I mean, it's just endless rules. And it was just exhausting.
I've got a friend who's currently doing the alternating drinks thing, only on a weekend thing. And I can see where it's going to go. You know, at some point they're going to just knock it on the head like I did. The 20 in 2020, Claire, just to try and explain myself a bit here. I was a radio producer by trade, and in the commercial radio industry, always start with a name. And 20 in 2020 it worked for me. But the idea was I had like stag do's coming up. I was best man at a wedding. And I was like, well, my brother was turning 30. So I was like, well, I've got to drink when my brother turns 30. So therefore, I'm going to massively cut down, because 20 days out of 365 isn't that many at all. Lockdown hit and it just completely went out the window. Interestingly, Shaz, I don't think I've told you this. My girlfriend Jem told me the other day that she told her dad about my 20 in 2020 thing.
Right.
And he got it completely wrong. And he's going, well, that's very good because he's a lovely man. He thought I was going to have 20 days off drinking, not 20 days on drinking. And that tells you his opinion on me before I quit alcohol.
Well, there we go. Say no
more,
Ben.
The thing about something like 2020 or 20 in 20, or, you know, not drinking during the week, only drinking at weekends, those sorts of things, is you end up just wishing your life away, because you end up just thinking, I can't wait to get to Friday night because that's when I can drink, or I can't wait to get to my brother's 30th because that's when I can drink. And, you know, life is so short that, you know, spending most of your life wanting to get to the next point when you can have alcohol is just so miserable. So, and I spent so much of my time doing that, you know, wishing away the hangovers and looking forward to the next, you know, the next big event, and rather than just enjoying the moment I was in. And that's just really sad, I think.
But it is a terrifying thought. Let's not beat about the bush. When you are a big drinker, a daily drinker, maybe just a weekend binge drinker, whatever, you know, whatever sort of drinker you are, and alcohol is sort of causing problems in your life. For me, you know, I thought this is becoming a situation because I'm just basing all decisions around when I can drink alcohol. Like you, Claire, if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking and then recovering from drinking and then drinking again because I was recovering from drinking. And it was just this cycle, this hamster wheel of hangover hell, I called it.
Yeah.
The thought of tackling an alcohol-free life, I literally said, how do you do that? How does anybody stop drinking and enjoy life? But in order to answer that question, you've got to do it, haven't you? You've just got to jump in.
You know what? That's why I wanted to publish the book, because when I quit, I read loads of sort of scientific stuff about alcohol, and I read the Alcoholics Anonymous big book, and I read loads of memoirs. And generally, the memoirs, you know, would be all about the drinking years. So it's like, here are all the, you know, terrible things I did when I was drinking. And I'd nod away thinking, oh, yes, I've done things like that. And I'd, you know, there were times when I think, oh, I haven't been quite that bad. So yay, go me, you know. and then you get to the end of the book and whoever it is says, and then I quit drinking and now my life is much better. And I think, hang on, this can't be the end of the book, because I want to know how you quit drinking, and I want to know what it felt like, and I want to know how long it takes to start feeling normal again. And, you know, I want to know whether it gets difficult before it gets easier, and all these things. And, you know, I couldn't find the answers to those questions. And that's sort of, you know, that's why I wanted to publish the book about, you know, the first year of my life not drinking, to answer all those questions. You know, what does it feel like? How long does it take? You know, how can you make it easier? All those things that, you know, I just didn't have the answers to back then.
Claire, I totally agree. I think one of the things that I love about your books and a lot of the things that you talk about is the whole concept of secrets and truths. And yeah, one of the things I know you said was, yeah, what would happen if we all told the truth about our lives? And I believe that, and certainly this was for me, that I used to drink, certainly in the later days when it stopped being fun and it just started to be about, because I was unwilling to face the truth about myself, or maybe I was hiding some secrets from myself that I just didn't want to face. And when I stopped and I started to face those truths, to be honest with you, I didn't want to. And it felt like that movie, The Matrix, I guess everyone's seen, you know, where 99% of the people are quite happy living in the Matrix and living this life of lies. And I was there thinking, really, was living a lie so bad? Because I was having fun, or so I thought, and I was popular and I was social, and it always seems to be these different levels of truths that we tell ourselves, that we're happy or we're sociable or that we're great fun and everything, but there's a deeper truth underneath that means we've all got to do some work on ourselves. And do you feel that everyone could potentially do with a break from alcohol, or do you feel there are some people who can genuinely moderate, like your husband, who could always go through sort of living that genuine life?
Yeah, I think there are people who don't have that dopamine problem, that, you know, that can moderate both sugar and alcohol and crisps and all the things that I find very difficult to moderate. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I think there are some people who can do it. Having said that, I think there is a real advantage, whatever sort of drinker you are, to trying to do 100 days alcohol free, because I just think it's really worth everybody knowing what life is like and what they are like without that sort of numbing effect of a drug. And, you know, when I quit drinking, it takes quite a long time. So I say 100 days, because it does take quite a long time for your brain chemistry to normalize when you've been drinking over a long period of time, even if you haven't been drinking that much. But when it does, you find that, you know, I don't know if you experienced this, but it feels almost like somebody's turned the colour contrast up on your TV screen.
Oh, my God. I say this, Claire. I say it's like living life in HD.
Yeah, exactly. And you realise that when you numb all the difficult things, which is what we're trying to do when we drink often, you numb all the good things too. And everything becomes muted. And, You know, so even those people who can drink moderately, I think just learning what the world and what you in that world are naked, coming back to the walking down the street naked thing, is a really valuable exercise, personally.
Claire, something I'd love to talk to you about is struggles and when life still throws you a wobbly, even after you've gone alcohol-free and you think everything's going to be perfect and great now. Of course, life goes on and it isn't. As I mentioned at the beginning, I was a bit sceptical when I first... Shazza recommended your book to me and I was a bit sceptical when it arrived.
Oh,
I thought,
thank you.
As I said, how am I going to relate to this woman's story? I immediately liked you. I'm not sure if that's been obvious in this episode or not.
Oh, thank
just,
you.
Just the way you wrote. And you know, I was reading it at the same time as I was reading William Porter's book, Alcohol Explained. It's kind of, and he's been a guest on our podcast. He's a lovely, lovely man. And I love his book. I did actually put his down to carry on with yours. Because I did, in my mind, I was thinking, I'm going to try and, because you write it, if you've not read Claire's book, you've got the day numbers as you go through. I was going to try and stagger it a little bit. I didn't. I just binged the whole thing. I was absolutely devastated when you were diagnosed with breast cancer. I haven't, very luckily, had to face any major life, apart from what we've all done with the global pandemic, but I mean personally, any major life changes. How differently do you approach something like that, being alcohol-free, to if you were drinking?
God, you know what? I think that for me, you know, I've been alcohol-free now for 6 years, and you know, now I see that as being one of the most fundamental changes in my life, is the way I deal with adversity, because I spent so much of my life avoiding, running away from anything I was scared of. You know, I had this terrible fear of failure. I was sort of, you know, I lost my courage somewhere along the way. And I think that was because whenever I was scared or anxious, I would medicate with alcohol. So I got unused to dealing with fear. And the problem with that is that when something bad hits, you don't know how to deal with it. The only coping mechanism you have is turning to a drink. So if I've still been drinking when this pandemic happened, I know for sure that I would have gone to my cupboards and thrown out all the loo roll and all the pasta and all the really important stuff. And I would have just filled it all up with alcohol. And I would have spent my whole time stressing about sort of, you know, whether I, you know, where I was going to buy booze from. And I remember, you know, looking at, seeing on social media, people complaining, and that, remember when all there were all the runs on all the on the supermarkets, like right back in the early days of lockdown one, and you know, people were stripping the alcohol shelves, and that would have really freaked me out. You know? I would have dealt with it really, really badly. And you know what I learned from the whole cancer thing, which was 8 months after I quit, is that dealing with stuff sober is so much easier than dealing with stuff with alcohol. And that was sort of counterintuitive, because every time before then something bad had happened, my immediate response would be a drink will make it feel better. And actually, even, you know, when I was going through all these tests for you know, for my breast cancer, every time I had another biopsy or a scan or whatever, the doctor or nurse involved would say, now, why don't you go and have a nice strong drink? You know, pour yourself a gin and tonic. And, you know, it was just expected that that was the way you would deal with things. And I know that if I'd been drinking at that time, that, you know, I would have coped really badly. I would have cried in front of my kids. I would have, you know, I would be spending the whole time either drunk or hungover. And, you know, dealing with a cancer diagnosis is bad enough, but dealing with one with the hangover on top would be even worse. And I would have been a total mess. I would have doubled the amount I was drinking, and I would have been a mess. And as it is, what I learned is that all those tools that you use when you first quit drinking are exactly what you need to get through something like a cancer diagnosis. So all the stuff that you did, like taking it one day at a time, not looking too far ahead, keeping yourself busy, You know, looking after yourself, you know, all the distraction techniques and the self-care stuff, all of that is exactly what you need when you're going through anything traumatic. So what you could see it as, if you're in the middle of that, you know, the hard days and the early days of not drinking, that's, in a way, that's your warm-up. You know, that's your warm-up for the next big bombshell that might hit your life, and you will be so much better at dealing with whatever that bombshell is having done this. You know, it's great practice for what comes next.
I totally agree, Claire, and I think there's something that we face in our lives, and I was very much the same in terms of it. I tried to avoid any hardship. I tried to, you know, hardship for me back in the heavy drinking corporate days when I was in London. Yeah, that was saying, right, I'm gonna psych myself up and I'm gonna stay at a 4-star hotel tonight, not a 5-star hotel, and I'm gonna bloody do it. I'm gonna be strong and be brave, and I'll be in the bar trying to get through it by throwing cocktails down my neck and everything. And I was just trying to cover myself in this, you know, alcoholic cotton wool and not face the trials and tribulations of life. And I wanted to ask you and come on to your wider writing career. Obviously, you know, you had the Sober Diaries, you had you know, your first novel, the Authenticity Project that's recently come out. Do you feel, firstly, the bigger picture question, did you ever see yourself being an author in this way back when you were drinking? And secondly, trying to put a positive spin on everything that we've all been through, you know, both sober and in the drinking days, do you feel it's helped you, you know, become a better, more authentic writer and person?
Gosh, well, when I was little, if you'd asked me as a child or a teenager what I wanted to be when I was a grown up, my answer would be, I want to be a writer. You know, I've always loved reading. I've always loved creative writing. You know, that was my thing when I was little. And, you know, but then life got in the way, and I spent 2 decades or so just sort of working really hard and drinking really hard. And I didn't do any writing apart from PowerPoint presentations and emails. And when I quit drinking, I had this immediate urge to start writing. I knew that it would be a good form of therapy for me. It would be my way of exploring what was going on in my head. And it was. And I wrote every single day, and I've written every single day since. And I wouldn't have done that if I'd still been drinking, because, you know, I didn't until I stopped drinking. It's funny, we often think that alcohol makes you more creative, and I think absolutely the reverse is true. As soon as I stopped drinking, it felt like my synapses were firing in a way that they hadn't done before. And it's really strange that I hear from so many people who say that when they quit drinking, they end up rediscovering their childhood passions. And, you know, often you find people go back to sport or art or gardening or, you know, or horse riding, you know, all sorts of different things. But often the thing that you turn to at that moment of sort of, you know, crisis is the thing that you loved as a child. I think there's often a clue there as to what your, you know, what your thing is, you know, what your passion should be. And the other reason I didn't write until the point where I quit drinking was this fear thing. So, you know, I was terrified of, you know, of not making it. You know, the idea of sending a book to agents and dealing with rejection constantly and dealing with reviews and all, you know, I didn't see how I could do that. And again, you know, quitting drinking made me brave. You know, it made me able to take the sorts of risks that I wasn't able to before. And, you know, I sort of felt, well, if I can do this, then, you know, I can do anything really. And, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? So a long way round of answering your question. I don't think I would have been a writer if I hadn't quit drinking. I would still be in the position I was in 6 years ago, but worse. And, you know, the second part of your question was, you know, do you think those drinking years made you a better writer? And, you know, again, I think yes, probably, in that not the drinking as so much as the years immediately afterwards, all those days that I spent exploring through my blog what was going on in my head, I think gave me the ability then to start looking into other people's heads. So with the Authenticity Project, you know, one of my characters is an addict. He was a cocaine and an alcohol addict. And, you know, I found it very easy to write him because I've sort of been there, done that. But, you know, it allows you also to sort of climb into, it gives you empathy, I think. It allows you to climb inside other people's heads and know what they might be dealing with and what might be going on in their minds. And that is, that's an important thing to be able to do as a writer.
Claire, that the idea of going back and thinking about when you were a child, I'm delighted to know that now I'm alcohol free, I can still be a fireman on Monday, an astronaut on Tuesday, an Aston Villa player on Wednesday, and then on the beach for the rest of the week. That's fantastic news.
Go for it, Ben.
Okay, we're just going to take a quick break from this fabulous episode of Over the Influence because we wanted to let you know that we have got actual merch. Yes, OTI merch available for shipping worldwide on our website. So we've got a budget of absolutely zero, which means we don't have any models showing off our stuff on the website. It is my massive face smiling in a t-shirt. And as well, we've got some rather fabulous mugs that you can fill with your fave brew or your booze-free tipple. Bring it to one of our Bring a Brew Zooms that we hold throughout the week. And we do these privately in our wonderful community. So if you fancy repping the OTI brand, have a look at our website, overtheinfluence.co.uk. So much of what you just said there, Claire, it is like you are in my brain. It's phenomenal. Talking about removing alcohol, it really does make you brave, doesn't it? I mean, I used to be in broadcasting many, many years ago, like Ben, and you would literally go to the opening of an envelope if there was going to be free alcohol. That started in my 20s. What am I now? Obviously in my 40s. Alcohol free. Never ever set out to be here, as with many people when they start. And I'm now back in broadcasting and I still have to pinch myself. The terror, Claire, the absolute terror of stepping back into that world, which is my absolute passion. I can't even tell you how much I enjoy it. Would I have done that if I'd still been drinking?
Well, actually, Shaz, you know, you're kind of underselling yourself there because you were a broadcast journalist for many years and now, you know, you're now got your own show, which, you know, broadcast journalists do a fantastic job. It's a very different skill set to be a broadcast journalist than it is to anchor. Is it 4 hours you do every single day?
I do, yeah. Yeah, 4 hours a day, 20 hours a week. It's utterly, utterly terrifying most days. And thank you. Thank you. That's really, really kind of you.
Yeah, it's a hugely different skill that you've just... And I've only ever known you as alcohol-free, Shaz. I've seen you as a radio producer. I've seen you go from the news desk to being behind the main desk. And you've smashed it out of the park, Shaz. You've done a brilliant job transitioning. It's not an easy transition to make.
And as you said there, Claire, you know, once you strip back the noise and the nonsense of alcohol, and we sing this song a lot on the podcast, it's that song from The Greatest Showman, This Is Me. Go on, Freddie. Go on. This is your cue.
Whoa. I do apologise, Claire. I think this is such a key thing, Claire, because, yeah, in terms of my journey, I stopped drinking. I did a lot of running and, you know, I channeled my... I needed to run just to sort my head out and get my headspace and everything else. But one thing that I always say is that I think certainly in that alcohol-free world, and the inverted commas do not work on a podcast, obviously, but sometimes people feel pressured about, right, I've given up alcohol and everyone's running, so I guess I should go and be a runner, or I guess I should go and do an obstacle course race, or do any of these, you know, these gym physical things. And I say no, and I fully believe that if people have always had that desire or that small voice in the back of their head that says, I've always wanted to write a book, or I've always wanted to go to an art class, or I've always wanted to, you know, to travel to a different place, or do pottery or photography or whatever it is. It doesn't always have to be these macho strong activities. Mm. It's about helping people to have the time of their lives and to make the most of their time and to not live a life of regret, because I mean, I've got thousands of regrets from when I was drinking, that's for sure. And I wanted to focus on how can I make sure my future isn't full of regret? And part of that is helping people to do the things that they've always wanted to do, but haven't for some reason. And I think what you've got with the writers is such a great kind of inspiration for people.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it, how much more time you have? Because, you know, it's not just the fact that you're not spending time hungover and you're not spending time drunk, but you're also, you know, you've got this clear headspace. And that for me was really transformational, is just realizing that, you know, I had space in my head to do other things with. And people do all sorts of extraordinary things with that extra time, and, you know, like we've all done. And it's but I mean, I would say that doesn't often happen in the first year, and I don't know if that was true for you, because, you know, the first year is exhausting, and you're going through, I think the first year is really about looking inwards. It's about working out who you are and what you want to be, and you know, it's getting your head back to get in place and getting your body back in shape and all of those things. And it's then often in the second year when you start thinking, okay, well, now I'm starting to feel okay. You know, I'm feeling good about myself. I'm feeling good about life. And what am I going to do with it? So, you know, I would say don't panic if you haven't immediately, you know, having quit the drink, started doing something extraordinary, because, you know, you have time. You've got, you know, acres of time.
I totally agree that I think in that first year, it's all about helping ourselves and getting our bodies and our minds in the best possible space. It's, you know, it's the airline metaphor of having your own oxygen mask on first before you can start helping others.
There's a film called 28 Days. Have you watched that?
Is that the zombie one, or am I thinking about 28 Days Later?
No. No, it's called 28 Days, and it's about a woman who goes into rehab for 28 days, and then sort of what happens next. And I don't remember the film very well at all, but I do remember when she was doing all her therapy and everything in rehab, they said, you know, in the first year after you come out of rehab, don't throw yourself into a relationship, because, you know, you just won't be in the right place to you know, to have a new relationship at that point. If you know, what you should do is get yourself a plant, and if you can keep your plant alive, then move on to a cat. And then if the cat is still alive and the plant is still alive at the end of the first year, then you can look at sort of having a proper relationship. And I thought that was, that's quite an extreme example, but I think it is true that you have to take it slowly.
I don't think it's too far off the mark, Claire, because if you think about it, and I mean, for me, years and years of drinking, not years and years of daily drinking, but a long time, that's what it was getting to. You can't undo 15 years of drinking overnight, can you? And people just sort of expect to stop drinking, and then miraculously the weight drops off, you've got all the energy, your life changes, but it just doesn't happen in 7 days. And you touched on it a little bit earlier on, Claire. You said around 100 days, and it was exactly the same for me, thereabouts. I reached 90 days, and I was at the point, Claire, where honestly, I was just about to ring the doctors, because I thought, why am I so knackered? Why am I just not feeling fresh? You know, those books promised me this and sobriety promised me that. I was feeling dog rough. And then actually, I got to triple figures and something just went ping. And I thought, and there we go. But you've just got to ride it out, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. And I think it's worth knowing that, because I think what so many people do is they do like dry January. And dry January means that you're doing all the hardest bits, but you don't ever get to the really good bits. Yeah. So you're not really seeing what life without alcohol is really like. And, you know, if you know that it takes 100 days, you don't worry so much when, as you said, you know, you get to day 80 and you still feel like shit, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Because you know that that's actually perfectly normal, but it does seem, you know, 100 days can seem an awfully long time when you first quit, you know. It's I can see how it's really frightening, but it does, you know, it does take a while.
Claire, talking about that 100 days, obviously your book, The Sober Diaries, great book. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. I've really enjoyed it. But it's a year for the first year. It starts at day one. This podcast, we know, is not just people who are listening to this. We've got alcohol-free people who listen, but also the kind of sober curious. I've had someone say to me in the last couple of weeks that they haven't quit drinking yet, but they're listening to series one of our podcast because they would like to, and they're just kind of testing it out, see how it feels. So for somebody who is in that stage, 100 days can feel like a really long time. What would you say to those people who are thinking this is probably good for them? 100 days is a really long time. What tip would you give them? Is there a number one, or is that just too simple?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things to do before you quit is to do the thing that we've all talked about having done for quite some time, which is try and moderate. Because if when you quit drinking, you still think that you could potentially go back to being able to have a drink every now and again, you will at some point fall off the wagon, because there will come a time when, you know, you're sort of 2 months in or whatever, and you think, okay, now I've reset the dial. I know what I'm doing. I'm a sort of, you know, I'm a completely different person, and I'm going to be able to just have one drink at a wedding and it won't cause any problems. And the truth, you need to know that that's not possible in order to be able to get to the end of the 100 days. And the only way you can know if that's not possible is by trying it. So, you know, I would just advise everybody to, you know, try moderating the amount you drink and see if you can do it. See how hard it is. See how much it messes with your head. And only at the point where you think this is not working for me, that is the point at which you quit altogether. Because otherwise I don't think it sticks. And I've seen so many people do really well, and then, you know, sometimes after a whole year of not drinking, they go back to it because they think, now I can moderate. And, you know, you just need to know, are you somebody who can moderate, or are you not? And that's a really important thing to know about yourself up front. Do you agree?
I think it's brilliant, actually. I do. I think it's brilliant, because if you'd have told me, Claire, like 900 and odd days ago, I'd have been like, right, okay, brilliant. Great advice from Claire Pooley there. I am going to try and do this moderation thing. Watch this work. And then I swear to God, I'd have lasted probably 2 weeks maximum, because the noise in my head, it would have just tipped me over the edge. So bollocks to this, let's just say no.
Well, I'm noticing as well to highlight that I definitely cannot moderate. And I think to mention something that you said earlier, Claire, about the wider things in our lives. Like at the moment, my sugar consumption is crazy. Like I'll have one little Haribo just for a treat. The next thing I know, I'm like lying in a daze, surrounded by Haribo wrappers, saying, "Oh no, you've done it again, Freddie! You're so stupid." And I've got all that regret and everything. But it's true. Like there are signs, I believe, in our lives, and you know, whether it is, you know, diet, you know, some people it's exercise, who just can't moderate their exercise and have to do a crazy amount of it. And there's all these clues, and I think you're absolutely right. There are some of us, and maybe we should be out and loud and proud about it, that we are the non-moderation crew in life, and try and make the best of it.
There are really good things about being all or nothing. You know, I think the all or nothing crowd are some of the most extraordinary, passionate, energetic, enthusiastic people. They're just overly enthusiastic about some of the wrong things sometimes. So, you know, I had exactly the same problem with cigarettes. So I gave up smoking when I was 30, but before then I smoked sometimes, you know, 30 or 40 cigarettes a day. I mean, I was a terrible smoker. And I remember giving up. I did the same thing. I gave up for a year, and then I thought, oh, I can just have one now. I'm going to a party, I'll just have one cigarette. And within 2 weeks, I was back on a packet a day. And, you know, and I know that I would be exactly the same with alcohol. And I know that because I've been there, you know, I've given up and restarted, and, you know, I've done it endlessly. And I'm exactly the same with sugar. So my way of getting through lockdown was cake. And now I'm having to go through the whole cold turkey thing with the cake, and which is just the same as giving up alcohol in many ways. It's, you know, again, it's the same, you know, skills.
It's strange. I could have alcohol in the house now, but I can't have sugar in the house at the moment. Like, that's how bad it's got. I'm fine saying no to alcohol, but yeah, if you dangle a Twix or a Haribo in front of me, then yeah.
Well, I'm glad to say that this episode has made me hungry and not thirsty.
Claire, it's been ace. It's just been wonderful. And at the risk of sounding like Ben, who fanboyed his way through this, I'm just going to fangirl at the moment. Your book at the beginning of my alcohol-free journey, and I'm talking within the first 5 days when I ordered it, and I was sitting there angry, raging. This is absolutely awful. I had your book, and it was on my bedside table, and you just made me feel normal and actually inspired me to be able to do this. And so from me, genuinely, I thank you so much, because it has changed my life. It's changed my life in ways that I can't believe. And I'm actually getting a bit emotional. It really has changed my life. So thank you. Thank you so much for chatting to us. We really appreciate your honesty, and we appreciate you sharing your story. Claire, your top tips, they'll just be so invaluable for people listening to this. People like me, you know, mums who think a bottle of wine a night is perfectly normal, when actually, when you stop and think about it, it's not, is it? Claire, thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy. We have just loved every single minute with you. Thank you. As well as the Sober Diaries, which, if you are listening to this and you haven't read it yet, please get it. It's hilarious. It's brilliant. It is written from the heart, and I swear it'll make you feel normal. You will feel less of a freak for going alcohol free. So please get that. But Claire, you've also got the Authenticity Project, which is your first novel. Just tell us a little bit more about that, where you can find it, and where people can find out a bit more about you.
Okay, so, well, firstly, actually, before I do that, I just want to say how much fun I've had talking to you guys. You are amazing. And I'm reminded, as I am so often, that people who don't drink are some of the best people in the world. And it's so, you know, I think all of this is about feeling less alone. I felt so lonely when I first quit. And yeah, so you guys are great. And the Authenticity Project, and it was inspired by my story, actually, because it's really about what happens when you tell the truth about your life. And the Authenticity Project is started by an artist called Julian, who writes the truth about his life in a little green notebook, which he leaves in a cafe. And the notebook is picked up by the cafe owner, who decides to track him down and try and make his life better. And she writes her story in the book and passes it on. And this little book is passed between six people, complete strangers, who then all get to meet each other, and they change each other's lives in extraordinary ways. So it's really about the magic of connection, which is effectively what saved my life. You know, finding people like me was what made, yeah, it was what made life possible again. So so that's the novel. And you can find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire_Pooley. Twitter at @CPooleyWriter, and I have a Facebook page called Sober Mummy. So that's where I am.
The magic of connection. Claire, that has just nailed it. Thank you so much.
And thank you, everybody. It's been great. I love you.
Hello, this is Ben, and you come to the end of another wonderful episode of Over the Influence. But of course, there's always stuff going on in our online community. Just go to overtheinfluence.co.uk to see everything that we've got going on. There's free blogs, free resources. Obviously, we've got all our connection side of it too. But I just wanted to quickly tell you before we end about our monthly masterclass sessions. If we've had a guest that we think is amazing and they haven't been able to fit all that I want to talk about into a normal episode of the free podcast that you've just listened to, and we invite them to be a masterclass guest where it's exclusive for our community members, and essentially we dig even deeper into their stories and we mine them for their knowledge and their information. Look, they are fabulous. We've had Sarah Connolly do a masterclass for us in the past, Claire Pooley, William Porter. These are big names that give us their time because they want to help people like you. Look, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk and sign up as a community member now. There's so much other stuff going on as well. It's fabulous. We love it and we're really proud of it. That's it. Thank you for listening to this week's episode and see you again next week.